Hello, hello. You're listening to the Goggler Podcast. Ian Baher and Uma with you as always, with two more brand new releases to talk about this week. We're going to be covering Coda, which is a brand new film on Apple TV Plus, as well as the long-awaited release of What If, the MCU's first ever animated series. It's not Marvel's first animated series. They've produced a lot of garbage over the years, but this is the MCU's first animated series, which means it is canon to Phase 4.
We'll get to that.
Yeah,
we'll get to that. We'll see. Yeah.
But before we get into that, how's it been another week in quarantine?
Hair management's getting more and more complicated.
The quiff is beginning to take proper shape now.
Yes, we're pre-beehive hairdo coming soon.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah,
so much product.
it's an exponential graph of the amount of product required to just achieve the same ish results,
and it doesn't even last all day. Because if you make the mistake of doing your hair before you put on your t-shirt, that is an error.
Rookie mistake. Good.
Why are you guys putting on product? Where are you going?
No, it's just unruly, man.
Yeah, I think we can't sweep our hair back like you. We can't just... You're able to sweep your hair back, and I think it's all right. Like, mine doesn't do that.
Right. Same. Yeah, I've stolen too many of my wife's hairbands and hair ties. So that's what I'm dealing with. If I have to go to the shop, I'll just put on a cap and be done with it.
I've done that.
See, also, if I don't do my hair, and then I go downstairs to collect the grab, that guy thinks I'm a serial killer.
Mm.
So... I'm trying to avoid that kind of nonsense.
I'm sure at this point they're used to it. I walked past their building manager the other day and I didn't recognize him because his hair was so long.
I don't know. I usually tend to at least dress up a little before I go grocery shopping. I knew I've reached a new low when I just went out of my jammies the other day. I was just like, the trousers are on. I just need bread. Fuck this.
We've all been there. But yeah, I have my two doses. My vaccine certificate is all available. Just let me go get a haircut.
Yeah.
Buy some new shorts. Did I tell you all the left leg and all the shorts I bought before this lockdown started unrolling, right?
Why all the left legs? I don't get it.
I was sick and tired of finding pairs of shorts I liked, so I just bought like four pairs in Uniqlo because everything was locking down. It's like I
do that all the time.
I can't be doing with like the shorts I have from before. They've all developed holes in one pocket and the coins keep falling out.
Oh yeah.
So I just bought four pairs of shorts, different colors, you know. That should be what a genius move, right? Genius move. Not a genius move because they all have the same design flaw. I don't know what it is with these pair of shorts, but the left leg on all of them, the hem comes undone.
Huh.
Wow.
And I'm not even walking that much. That's the thing. It's like, this is during lockdown, and Uniqlo, I'm disappointed with you.
I thought the holes started developing in the same pocket at the exact same space.
No, I mean, that generally happens because that's where I put my keys, and if I'm walking around the place, that'll rub in certain ways. But no, this is a whole new problem. Just like, you're walking to get groceries and there's this weird feeling on your leg and it's the thread from the shorts is just all the way down to your ankle. And you're like, mother, God damn it. This is not a sponsored post.
No, it's obviously not. Yeah.
Hey, so before we get into Coda and What If, there is a new anthology series that dropped on Netflix, this Tamil anthology series, which we got the feisty Indian auntie to write about, called Navarasa, which is like a series of 9 shorts, right? They're all about 30 minutes each. And after she had written her piece, I think it's live on the website now, I checked out a couple of episodes and I have to say it's really quite interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So Navarasa in Tamil kind of describes 9 emotions. Mm-hmm. So every episode features one of those, like compassion, love, fear, you know, that kind of stuff. One of the emotions that as human beings we will encounter throughout our lives, right? And they're all done by famous Indian directors. And it was produced by this guy called Maniratnam, who is like one of the, like the Scorsese of India, like one of the most famous Indian directors, right? And there's stories about war. There's a sci-fi story that clearly takes inspiration from Inception and like Interstellar. And I don't usually see Tamil stories like that because they usually churn out the same shit, which is the love stories, blah, blah, blah. And this was really fascinating. Like, obviously, there are some hits and misses, like in all anthologies, but I was watching it and I was thinking, 30-minute shorts, this might be something Malaysian filmmakers could pull off. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but that's interesting, because that's something I've been thinking about for a while now, about how Netflix's international studios tend to come up with a lot more interesting content compared with the American stuff. The American stuff tends to be, yes, you get fucking Jason Momoa in a show. But then it sounds like any other, it doesn't sound special, doesn't sound different.
It sounds like Jason Momoa in Taken, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But here, you watch American sports, you've seen what American TV is like.
That's true.
So, I mean, there's a level of unreality from like their normal broadcast reality TV shows. So when it comes to the fiction stuff, you know, they're already starting from a higher, weirder baseline.
Yeah, but it just feels like they're at that point where they're just sort of, And I think this is something that Netflix is guilty of just churning shit out. You know, the Kevin James shit, the Jamie Foxx shit. It just feels like shit. What's a Jamie Foxx family sitcom doing on Netflix in 2021?
God, I forgot that existed.
Yeah, dude. I think it feels like a show from the early 90s. Yeah, and it just got canned. Yeah. So it just feels weird.
But no, check it out. I think you guys might... Yeah, like it. Cool. It's really fascinating, but also I think it allows them to do stuff that they wouldn't be allowed to do otherwise. Like the one the Feisty Indian Auntie wrote about last week was a Hindi anthology, and that had like a lesbian love story, which you will never see in a Bollywood movie until today.
Oh, of course.
So I think it gives them the freedom to tell these kinds of stories that exist, but there's no avenue in mainstream media in India for this to happen. So that's quite cool.
Cool. All right. We'll definitely check it out. Thanks.
All right. So Coda, which is a brand new film on Apple TV Plus. Now, this thing broke all the records at Sundance, right? Because Apple TV Plus paid $25 million for the rights to Coda. It won a whole bunch of awards at Sundance as well. And it finally hits Apple TV Plus and cinemas, I think select cinemas in the United States. CODA actually means or stands for Children of Deaf Adults. And it's the story of Ruby, played by Emilia Jones, who is the sole hearing member of her family. And her family is played by Marley Matlin, Jackie, Frank, Troy Kotsur, and Leo, played by Daniel Durant. And it's this coming-of-age story, or rather, it's this rather traditional coming-of-age story, but with a twist, because obviously all the players in this story are deaf.
Mm.
And Ruby is a lot of things, right? So she's a student trudging her way through school, but she also helps on the family's fishing boat. She acts as the interpreter. And it also turns out that she has an incredible talent for singing, which she decides to kind of pursue.
Mm.
And you have this dilemma of responsibility towards family versus pursuing your dreams at the Berklee College of Music.
Because she can sing, which is good. You know, that's that. They don't bury the lead. She can sing.
Yeah.
She can sing.
Yeah. I mean, the movie begins with her belting out a tune on the boat, which I think was a fantastic opening, because obviously her father and her brother are just caring about their duties and they can't hear her, right? Mm. And I think that contrast was an amazing way to begin the film. But
yes,
I absolutely love this film. This is...
Yeah.
Just ranking right up there in one of my top 10 for 2021.
Yes, same.
And I'll tell you why. It's like I'm not always looking for something unique and revolutionary, but I'm always looking for a new take on something old, right? And so this is a coming of age story, and it hits almost all of the beats of every coming of age story you've ever heard. But yet, by featuring deaf actors, deaf culture, setting it in this deaf world, it becomes something completely different.
Yeah, we would not be this interested in it if it did not have that element, right? If the family were of hearing abled, and if she, you know, it's just the story about this high school girl who can sing but is also helping out with the family. I mean,
there's hundreds of those already.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, right? Yeah, this by making that crucial change, it adds a different element to it. It takes the story up to a different notch that we don't know of. And I think And I think the director's sort of hand in it is very beautifully placed as well. She does the director doesn't overplay moments, doesn't underplay moments. I'm annoyed, but at the same time, I think it's beautiful at the recital towards the end of the film where they drop out the audio. You know, I wanted to hear them sing the song because they've been practicing it throughout the film, right? And you're like, ooh, okay, the Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell song. But then suddenly they just drop it out and it's a beautiful moment because you're experiencing it through the eyes / ears of her family who are not able to get into the moment.
And even the lead up to that, Bahir, because there is that sense of awkwardness.
Yes.
Like they don't know what to do with themselves. So they kind of start signing to each other, asking, what do you want for dinner?
And they're bored. They're bored.
They're bored. Right? Yeah.
It's like absolutely, you're sitting in a room with these people and you're not, like, everyone's entertained by what's going on stage, but you don't hear it. And there's no speakers. It's not a amplified performance. So they can't even feel it against the speakers or anything like that.
Yeah. Can I just say I felt very what's the word I'm looking for? I felt in that moment because, you know, when you go to a religious meeting and a religious event and everybody's sort of speaking in Arabic, reading the prayers and all that, I have no idea what's going on.
You could relate.
I could relate. I mean, everybody around me is looking sad. I'm like, sure, I guess I'm sad now. But yeah, no, I mean, look, I'm making a funny. I'm not saying I'm like these characters, but I thought it was a beautiful moment. I mean, at the end of this movie, I wanted to text you guys and go like, fuck, what if? I just want to talk about Coda for the rest of the podcast because I really love this film.
Yeah, because I was worried. There's certain parts where I started worrying, like, how Hallmark is this going to get?
Right.
There's a point where they pass a no swimming sign and it's leading up to one of those overly melodramatic worst days ever, but only one half of the worst day ever happens. But it's like when you're swimming in a hole that says no swimming, I'm like, oh God, someone's going to... Is this my girl?
Yeah.
Is something terrible going to... Is this going to be like several terrible things happen to really be a weepy? But it doesn't, thankfully, veer that far. But there's just... It is what you said, Uma. My regular complaint on things is when you do something and you haven't looked at what's come before. This looks at what comes before. You know, the parents smoke weed and like drink cheap bottles of wine. There's a great scene. You know, there's the realities of living in the house where... The parents don't know that she's at home with the friend, not the boy, the friend who's a boy, but not yet a boyfriend, who you're being put together in this music class, and just the noises start happening. Or even earlier than that, when she's doing her homework and the house is so noisy because no one can hear the noise they're making. There's so many nice moments like that.
And then Marley Matlin walks up to her and goes, you know, pull out the headphones. That's rude.
Yes.
You know, and she goes like, what is going on?
Well, the Tinder's not rude because Tinder is something we could do as a family.
Tinder at the dinner table. Yeah, yeah.
All of those moments, one, very well observed, but also I think it demonstrates just how much Sean Hader, the director, had engaged with the deaf community. So this movie is based on a French film, and the French film got a lot of criticism because they used hearing actors and it wasn't actually about deaf people or deaf culture. That was just the gimmick by which to tell the story. Hader, on the other hand, had the crew was made up of deaf people and of coders. I remember I was reading an interview and she said they had set up the house and then Marley Matlin comes in and Marley Matlin goes, no, deaf people would never set up their house like this because everyone needs to face each other. And so they had to redo the sets. And so there was a real eye to detail to making sure they got all of this stuff right. And the thing is, it isn't blatantly pointed out to you in the film. It just is. And but you can take it all in and you see all of that happening. And it was just so well made in that sense.
Like there's a point where Ruby tells her mother that she's in choir and her mother says, while her mother's eating strawberries and scrambled eggs, I don't know, that's a Marley Matlin thing or what? That's just weird breakfast. It stuck out to me. But she says about how I've joined choir and the mom's first reaction is, if I was blind, would you paint? And a lesser movie would have focused on that. Like that would have been the drama. And I was expecting that level of drama to kick in at any moment. But like dad was totally understanding. They get it. They don't get it. They very clearly don't get it. That's the whole point. But they kind of get that it's something she wants to do. And I love there's a beautiful moment where she tells her teacher that this is the first thing I've ever done without my family as well. Like, it takes these very nice moments and just lines them up in a great story.
And I think, like, those little moments of drama build up, right? It doesn't really anchor itself on one moment like that and then explode. Meanwhile, there are these small moments that play out between Ruby and her family that kind of build towards the tension of the whole film. So when you reach that moment when it's just her and her mom on the bed talking about what it's like and what their relationship is like, everything is earned. There didn't need to be one big shouting match.
Yeah.
But her parents were assholes. Like, I have a TV thing today. It's like, you tell your daughter, they are taking her for granted.
Yeah,
completely. And no one does. Yeah. No one likes being taken for granted like that.
And I mean, I think there was that one bit to speak to what you're saying, Uma. There was one bit where Ruby does have a blowout, essentially, right? She's explaining to the family about why she wanted to join, the choir, why she wants to go to Berkeley. And I think, like you said, that moment is earned throughout, because you, as the audience, are as frustrated with her, because you've gone from, for me at least, I went from the, she's being very helpful to her family because her family are disadvantaged to a certain degree. She's forgetting her family who needs her help. And I've switched over to her side going, actually, they are taking her for granted. I think like you said, Ian. So you've gone on that evolution, or at least I did. I went on that evolution with her because of all those little frustrations along the way.
And they bring it up as well, the fact that, you know, we are deaf friends. It's like, the ones you meet once a month. Like, they have their own, as much as they're part of a greater deaf community, they're part of their own little community more, because the town they're in, there's no deaf community in the town they're in. They are the deaf community in the town they're
in. Yeah, but even that, I love the fact that the town isn't played as the villain. They see, I wouldn't say the family sees the town as a villain, but it's just that they've sort of closed themselves off in some way, right, from the town, because they can't communicate and can't interact with the town.
You talk about villains. I kept expecting Fusco from Person of Interest to turn up to go bad, but he was fine the whole way through. He's the fisherman who's just like, he's in two or three scenes.
Yeah. Right.
But in Person of Interest, he was a crooked cop who ended up having to work for the good guys. And I was like, they cast him for a reason. Is there something to do with that no swimming sign? Oh, no.
You were saying, Bahe, about them closing themselves off to the community, right? Because Ruby essentially is the only bridge. And it's interesting watching her navigate between those two worlds as well. And for me, there is a moment halfway throughout the movie which kind of cemented the fact that Emilia Jones is absolutely astounding. And that is at the town hall meeting.
Yes.
So there's a town hall meeting, and her father and brother are fishermen, obviously. And it's a very heated town hall meeting because the fishermen are fighting against the middlemen or the dock bigwigs that are trying to extort them, right? And Emilia Jones's Ruby comes in.
Late.
She comes in late. She has to interpret what's going on for her father and brother. And then she's got to translate what they're saying when Frank suddenly, you know, decides to stand up for himself. And to pull that off, at that point, I was like, holy shit, this girl's amazing. She needs to know the lines of every single person in that scene, because she's hearing, signing, acting, translating every part. And it's insane.
Yeah.
Now, what did she say? What does she say? Suck my dick. And then he said that, not me.
He said that, not me. Yeah. Right? And I was like, holy shit. I think she was 17 when they made this. And like that was a masterclass in just everything, in ASL, in acting, in the works, right?
I was reading an interview, and it seems that she got cast in this halfway through doing Lock and Key. And so she had to, so she got herself an ASL coach to teach her, like, after she was done shooting Lock and Key. So she was pulling double. She was essentially Ruby in this movie, because she had a day job on the set, and then she had to go back and learn ASL. And then she had to then fly off to shoot this thing and had an ASL coach on set. So it was a lot to do.
Also, there was no talking as well, in the sense that when she was with the family, they would only sign. And so she became incredibly proficient at ASL nice. By the end right. of it.
Well, you have to. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she does speak out her words occasionally, and there's beautiful moments for that in that where like there's a girl in it. Like I know the direction I thought they were going to go in was the mean girl section where there's a girl who just does drive by hate crimes and just deserves to go to jail. Right? It's like when she says like it's a little fish, and her friend Gertie says, well, at least she's not doing deaf voice anymore. And you're like, I don't know that about this girl. I want to reach through the screen and strangle her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She has no role.
She does like three scenes, two scenes. I think she does that. And I'm just like, what a fucking bitch.
Yeah.
Hate her so much.
But there's moments when she tries to get herself across and she signs. That's how she can actually get her true feelings out, which is another just beautiful moment.
Beautiful moment, yeah.
I was surprised. I thought, I mean, Marnie Matlin was great in this, but I thought she would have more of a role in a way. I think it kind of leaned on the father and the brother a little more because I guess they're fishing together. Because I didn't realize that you had done the interview, Uma, and I was mad then because I've been in love with her since Reasonable Doubt on NBC back in 93 with... Mark Harmon. It's a great show. You should check it out.
Uma and I are in love with her as Joey Lucas from The West Wing.
Yeah, I knew that would come up. Yeah. I'm going to have to do something on the live stream where we have a West Wing reference counter in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of single note that way. I'm kind of single note that way.
I thought he was going to say a West Wing special by here because that'll just be a 24-hour live stream.
Yeah, I'll just set that up and then I'll go to bed, leave you to it. My window is just black.
Also, I have to say, Sean Hader does pull off something quite impossible in that she reappropriates a song. Like for me, Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now is Emma Thompson in the room crying by herself, Love Actually, right? I mean, that scene has kind of embedded itself into the consciousness of anyone who's seen a movie because it's so iconic. And they use this song in the film, and I won't spoil how they use it, but you have to watch it. But I think that kind of, yeah, it's now formed a new iconic moment in my head with the use of this Joni Mitchell song, which I thought was just perfect choice and also perfect execution.
And the way it cuts to the way it cuts in the middle of that song to what's going on, and you're like, what's happening here? And then it was it was devastating. My girlfriend was in bits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I also want to just we've spoken about Amelia Jones and Marley Matlin, but I think I want to talk about her father and about the character's father and brother played by Troy Kotsur and Daniel Durant.
Daniel Durant, who is the love child of Liv Schreiber and Sam Worthington.
Yes. Good shout. Yeah. I agree. I see that. Yeah. But they were amazing. The brother has a blowout, I think, towards two thirds of the way through the film when he's by himself and he has this conversation with Amelia Jones's character. And I think it was an interesting thing there because he's saying, you know, they treat me like the baby, but I'm the older brother, which is a weird thing because their parents are deaf, so they should relate to him more.
That argument's great because there's like three or four different things going on. Yeah, it's not just
a fight between siblings.
It's not just they love you more. It's, you know, I feel like I'm the outside because they talk through her, they don't talk with her. But it still doesn't feel like that to him. But he's also mad because she needs to go and do the thing she wants, because if she doesn't, she never will. And there's a couple of other layers to that argument, Cake. And that's, again, there's more going on in that argument. And that's exactly all this movie. You know, her parents are loving, but they're also, you know, weedheads who like to fuck in the middle of the day.
They're very funny.
Yes, they're very, very funny.
The doctor's appointment was beautiful. I thought that was great.
If you've ever thought your parents were embarrassing, you haven't seen nothing yet.
I mean, if you have to be the conduit of that embarrassing conversation, it's going to be even worse.
The mum and dad's reaction to when the duration for how long they can't have intercourse for. Like,
yes.
When she says never, and they're like, and then she says 2 weeks. I'm like, impossible.
Yeah. Because you're going to get around to, but 2 weeks you're going to have to try.
Yeah.
But it was also that thing of when the father was, the following up from that unfortunate incident at the house you mentioned earlier, Ian, where the parents sit Ruby and her boy friend 2 words down, and they have that conversation about putting the helmet on the soldier. I was just like, holy crap.
Some of those, all of that ASL. Yeah, some of those.
I want to learn.
Some of those signs are incredibly graphic, and I don't mean in like a
descriptive
way. Yes, they are like full body mime motions, whereas others are very, very literal.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man, that was great.
But yeah, on the bright side, now we all know how to sign twat waffle.
Yeah,
I played that back a couple of times.
Yeah,
I wanted to get that. Oh yeah, I wanted to get that.
But just going back to Troy Kotsur and Daniel Durant, I mean, this yet again is just symbolic of how little work deaf actors get in Hollywood, right? Because they always end up playing the deaf character in a film or a TV show because CSI needs a deaf extra, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I was looking them up on the internet, and Troy Kotsur and Daniel Durant are members of Deaf West, which is a huge deaf theater company in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been in the business for such a long time, and they, especially Troy Kotsur, Daniel Durant is relatively new, but Troy Kotsur is considered to be one of the best actors of his generation. Mm. And yet, we know nothing about him because, you know, he doesn't necessarily feature. And I mean, hopefully that kind of changes. I mean, Marlee Matlin's apparently got a new show coming out on NBC where she's the lead. And I don't think there's ever been a deaf lead in a network TV show before.
Have you seen Reasonable Doubt? From IMDb, a drama about the working relationship between assistant DA Tess Kaufman, who is Marlee Matlin, and a prosecutor sensitive to the rights of the accused and hard-charging, gruff detective Dickie Cobb, who you know is Mark Harmon. An old-fashioned cop with a bust the perps attitude. How could you not love that show?
I'm sure it's on Peacock.
Yeah, but she was she was a prosecutor and would have screaming matches deaf screaming matches with Mark Harmon trying to get her point across because he was not a shitty cop, but you know, he's a beat cop. He's an idiot beat cop. Mm. And she's trying to get cases sorted and her deafness was getting in the way because of him, not because of anything to do with her.
Right.
Yeah, I want to watch that show now. Again.
Actually, talking about, I guess, screaming matches as well, there was another thing that the director does in this film that's absolutely brilliant. I guess in all of those emotional moments, there's no music. It's silence. Yeah. And that was really so you can hear all the other sounds, like the rustling of clothes.
But also they're when the characters are emoting, right? When they're really angry, they make sounds.
Sounds, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's easy. I think it's an easy choice to actually play an emotional orchestral piece underneath to get you going. But she doesn't. And it's in all the arguments, all the fights, all of the emotional moments. It's silence. It's absolutely great.
On the music, I had to rewind and replay the credits because I zoned out. Like, I usually pay attention to the credits in case there's something interesting there. And Emilia Jones sings the songs. And they feels like they recorded them live on set. But yeah, the music is just... Like, they're singing back to back at one scene, or even the recital at the end, there's just very, very bare bones accompaniment. There's a piano and a guitar. And the songs they chose and the voices they have are outstanding.
But they recorded all the music live, and I think they had to be very cognizant, especially with the climactic scene, because they're singing and they're signing. So your take had to be perfect on both accounts. If not, they could only use... one of
close
the angles,
or something,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So it felt like quite the difficult film to put together. And I think it pays off at the end because this product is just so amazing. Yeah. Hmm. It will steal your heart. It'll make you cry for sure.
I teared up. I mean, you know.
Which is a hard thing to do because Bahi has
which
no soul.
It's not something I say, I say very often, but I teared up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's our goggler rated weepy for the weekend.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Coda is now streaming on Apple TV Plus. Be sure to check it out. We cannot recommend it highly enough. And yeah, let's talk What If now.
Oh, okay. Great segue. The master of segues. Let's talk about the next thing. You know, segues.
Not one of your better ones.
Yeah,
podcast segues
are not a linear path. They are only a prism for possibilities by here.
Okay. Sure.
A single choice can branch out into infinite realities.
Some of which can just stop the energy in a podcast dead.
And the choice Uma chose was the wrong one.
Absolutely.
Uma woke up today and chose violence.
Abrupt violence. All right. What if the MCU's first animated series, we had access to the first three episodes. We're not going to spoil anything in those episodes. But the first episode is kind of centered around Peggy Carter.
Mm.
And the what if question in this episode is, what if Peggy Carter got the super serum?
The title is, what if Peggy Carter were...
the first Avenger.
The first Avenger. Yeah, it was a really weird. Yeah. The were kind of caught me out. I was like, what? Is that right? What was?
Was? Were?
Is? Was?
Yeah.
I'm sure they checked with something.
Grammar.
Yeah. It's nicely... I guess it's the way the watcher would talk. What if Peggy Carter were the first Avenger?
So you've got to say it in that voice.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But that's the guiding light towards all of the episodes in the series, right? Just like the comics that came out in the 1970s, it's Marvel asking, what if something different happened to the characters that you already know and love?
Because they couldn't go with the title, we're doing this for shits and giggles.
Exactly. Because that's what the comics were. I mean, the comics were a bit of a lark. I mean, I think it was issue 11, basically Stan Lee and Kirby become the Fantastic Four, which is just one of the most ridiculous issues ever. And it was just an opportunity, I think, for Marvel to kind of let their writers and artists go nuts. And also, I guess, in another way, bring new readers into characters they wouldn't necessarily have read about. Because what the What If comics did was, in the first few pages, they would always talk to you about this major Marvel event and kind of recap what happened in some classic comic before going off on a tangent.
Hmm.
And this series is very rooted in the MCU. So, like how the MCU is structured, it is loosely related to the comics, but everything that happens in the series is based entirely on the film. So don't expect to see other zany stories outside of the MCU, which for a moment I thought they might do when I saw the trailer featuring Marvel zombies.
Mm.
Mm.
But it doesn't look like they're going that crazy.
No.
So wait, are you guys saying that we're not going to see a Marvel zombie?
No, we are. But
no,
I think
we are.
Not as a Marvel zombie. So it's just like a one-off.
I think they're taking the Kirkman storyline from the Marvel zombie comics and kind of superimposing it onto
the MCU,
an MCU
universe
version. Yeah.
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 Okay.
I mean, I had wondered with the, you know, all the importance that Loki seemed to have with regards to the multiverse. And there was an interview with the creators talking about, we're going to check in with Peggy Carter in follow-up seasons. There's a point in this, the first episode, when Peggy ends up, you know, well, these aren't new stories. There are echoes of what happens before. You know, something, you know, when she gets the super soldier serum, there's a point where she punches a punching bag across a room, but it's not the same point. Or she also disappears for 50, 60 years and then comes back.
But not in the same way.
Not in the same way, exactly. I thought that was going to be a jumping point for Peggy Carter's adventures in the multiverse, where maybe eventually she would maybe appear in the background of scenes, and then as the series went on, something would happen. And then, because Marvel Zombies, like, it's like Gwenpool, isn't there a Gwenom? Like, those characters
are
now,
Gwenom, yes.
They're not in their own little universes anymore, right? Like, Gwenpool's in a world where there's no Deadpool, but she's met Deadpool and things like that. So that comics are weird, guys. Sometimes they bring some of these things into the main universe. And there has been, like, you know, the Marvel Zombies started off somewhere, but they have had adventures where they've jumped between dimensions, right? And people have tried to stop the Marvel Zombies. Heroes from other dimensions have tried to stop them from continuing. And I thought that maybe we would get something like that, or maybe this would tie somehow into Loki and the TVA. But we're not getting that. They are very much standalone anthology stories.
It feels like that. I mean, at least from the first three episodes that we've seen, I don't know if they will suddenly shift things up towards the later half of the season.
Hmm.
But also, the one thing that's quite clear from the first three episodes that we've seen is that all of these stories aren't happening on one alternate Earth. They're happening on individual alternate Earths, right? So, and thus, the reason why nothing seems to be connected.
Yeah, because it's not happening on Earth 2 and Earth 6. It's like it's happening on Multiverse 617, 3200, and you
correct.
Pick a random number.
Correct. So the Fury you see in Episode 1 is different from the Fury you will see in Episode 3.
Yeah, or it might be, but it's still Samuel L. Jackson.
It's still Samuel L. Jackson, yeah. I have to say, I was a little concerned when they initially announced the series because I thought that the voice actors that weren't the original actors might be quite jarring, but they seem to have pulled it off quite well. Like, Steve in, or the actor who plays Steve, it isn't Chris Evans in episode yeah. one, does a very good approximation yeah. of that voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very good. Ross Marquand, who did the Red Skull in
the movies, right?
In Avengers Infinity War. Infinity War? What's the two-parter?
And Endgame. Yeah.
Endgame, that's what. He's just given up on doing a Hugo Weaving impression now, and he's just doing his own thing, which is fine. I mean, it's like the Homer Simpson voice, you know, Dan Castellaneta changed the voice a bit to make it easier, so he's probably doing the same. It's my role now, I can do it. But it does feel weird, the voices they did get. Like, it definitely sounds like Brolin in the second episode, right?
Yeah.
But then, didn't you share the article where Drax, like, Bautista didn't get asked?
Didn't get asked, yeah.
Which seems weird. That was a tweet,
yeah.
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 But Dominic Cooper does a very short, like, I suppose he's more than short, but Bradley Whitford's amazing in this first one, by the way. But he manages to be so sanctimonious and unctuous. It's, again, you want Peggy Carter to punch him through the city. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, who is that? Who is that? I had to know who that was. And I was like, of course it's Bradley Whitford.
He was in the West Wing, you know?
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, he was.
How do I get to the which Marvel universe is it where there's no West Wing that you fuckers bring up all the time? But I think talking about all this, we keep burying the lead. We'll get to it in a minute. But my worry about this show is that it is so anthology wise that I'm not sure if that What If seems like more of an in joke for fans than something to bring new people in. The comics, I think. Mm, I mean, like when you're talking about the comic, yeah. when you're talking about comic creators becoming the Fantastic Four, that's very much an in gag for the fans. That's yeah. not something yeah. that's going to appeal to someone who's never seen it before. This is kind of, I guess, trying to bridge the gap between the MCU fans who've never read a comic.
Mm.
To try and get them into that idea of multi. It's the same way that, like, I think I've mentioned this a couple of times before across different podcasts. You know, we've had movies have reached the point where the comics did in the 70s, where it's like you've had your Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. You've had the idea, like, everyone's cool with the idea that we can have Spider-Man within 3 to 5 years of each other. It's not jarring anymore. You can yeah. try different things. This is What If is like, okay, we're going to do the multiverse with the live action stuff with Loki and stuff like that, and maybe and Phase 4. But also, maybe we'll start doing, like, DC's already doing this. DC just doesn't care. They just cannot keep it together when it comes to a continuity. So maybe Marvel has got this very tight thing, and they're like, yeah, but we just want to try someone else as Thor for one weird little thing. We'll just do that. Is that okay? We'll do it as this now. We have this opportunity to do it.
No, but I think that's why What If worked for me, because Marvel was so, like, What If is the most fun that Marvel is having in a long time. I mean, don't get me wrong. The movies and the shows are fun, but there's still this undercurrent of seriousness throughout everything, right? Because everything we do here has consequence.
Yeah.
And everything matters in the big picture. And this feels like, fuck it, man. Let's have Thanos be a bar guy.
Yeah. Let's have Peggy Carter flipping trucks. That's the lead we're kind of burying, is that first episode is joyous.
Right?
Yes.
There is so much amazingness on screen. I was giggling watching it.
I was worried that animation would not hold up to the cool action shit that we've seen on Falcon and that we've seen in the films. But, man, the way they choreographed that action fight sequences were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and it also, the look of it is amazing. I think that's got something to do with Stephen Frank as the head of animation, because he worked on the Iron Giant. It is very Iron Giant-y.
It is.
There's that scene where the Nazi, she punches the Nazi big strong man in the gut, and his face is just, like, the 3D characters, as far as I can tell, with cel-shaded animation, which gives them the flexibility to be able to do these amazing things where they're flipping trucks and able to spin the camera around without, you know, having to outsource to some sweat farm somewhere doing 2D cell animation. But just this, I've made screen desktops of the, like, there's it's like the USO version of the Steve Rogers scenes from the first Avenger, where it's just, she's just smashes a guy with the shield.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful background. And another one, she just kicks a guy.
Yeah.
And it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And like she said, this is, she told to her, said, this is brilliant. Did you see that? Let's try it again. I loved it.
Yeah. 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 I loved that second episode with Bozeman as T'Challa as Star-Lord, right? I thought his take, I mean, we saw a little bit of it in the trailers, but his take on Star-Lord, his relationship with Rooker.
But he still has the same sort of gravitas that he would have brought to, that he brought to the character of T'Challa in Black Panther.
And I think that's why it works so well, right? Because he's not Peter Quill. So he's not the rogue. He still has that majesty.
Yes. And there's that, he has that kingliness about him, right? And there is, what he does with the Ravagers is very different. But there's also, I wasn't expecting that. I thought that would take the seriousness from Black Panther and inject that into the setting of Guardians of the Galaxy. But it took an awful lot of the comedy. I wasn't expecting, like, it is an outright comedy at times.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I wasn't, like, did not expect Jimon Hounsou came back to be Korath the Fan Pursuer, where he's just a fan of everything everyone's doing. And absolute, it's a delight. Fanboy.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, that first meeting, right? They could have easily, you know, just sort of been lazy and just reused the tone and the style from the movie, but they didn't. Jimon Hounsou's reaction to seeing T'Challa is different to when he saw Peter Quill, and I thought that was beautiful. Yeah.
I have to say, Ian, I kind of disagree with you. I found this a lot more accessible to newcomers. Hmm. Like, for me, and we've spoken about this before, WandaVision, Falcon, even Loki was so dense and almost unwelcoming to anyone who hasn't seen 24 movies, right?
Mm.
But where every 30 minutes has a clear introduction to each character, a beginning, middle, and end, and wraps itself up neatly in a bow, it felt like, I think even if you knew nothing about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if you were a kid and watching this, I think it works and it might excite you.
Oh, as a kid, probably, yeah. You're like, what is this? Yeah. But yeah. I think if you don't, I mean, you're saying that as someone who has at least 6 books with Marvel and Encyclopedia on the title within reach, right?
Maybe.
let's not get into that.
It is hard to put yourself in that mindset. But, like, yes, if you've seen Captain America, the First Avenger, or you've seen him in the Avengers, like, if you don't know who Peggy Carter is, you're not going to get as much, I think, out of that episode.
Mm.
If you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, you have to have seen Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther
I also want to say that I think this format works. It works for the sort of weekly drop. I think you sort of get, I want to say I got bored, but I just sort of, I knew what to expect in the second one now, right? I knew what to expect in the third one because I had seen 1, 2, and 3. I think over the course of a week, it sort of gives you that time to let it breathe, to go down those rabbit holes. And I think a weekly drop works for this because it's I wonder what's happening in this week's episode of What If. You drop in, you watch 30 minutes, and then you come out. You don't have that, the weight of Loki over several episodes. You don't have the weight of WandaVision over the entire season. It's a quick drop in, have a bit of a laugh, have fun, look at these characters do things that you didn't think they would, and then you sort of just jump out again. I think, I love the weekly drop for this. I think it's perfect for this.
And we haven't really said, but like the third episode is basically, what if Nick Fury was Poirot?
That should be the title of the episode.
Yeah. That was surprising. I would talk about the voice casting. I'm not sure, there's a short character who appears at the end of that episode. I'm not sure if that's him. I think that's him.
Is it him? Do we know?
It is him.
It is him.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's again, it's wild, the characters you get to come by. Hawkeye is in the end of this episode as well and appears. I mean, they got him to do a couple, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he just jumped over from the ADR recording of the Hawkeye TV series, right?
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
But you're right. It is weird, right? Because you would think that getting Brolin would be a lot more expensive than getting Batista.
But I think it's also just the number of lines they actually have. The Batista character is very short.
Hmm.
Except for Downey Jr., who no one can afford anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I think was Karen Gillan Nebula?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Like, I thought that was her. It's a bit hard to... Because there's certain characters you just cannot get there. The actors, you will not get their burr. And the fact that she calls T'Challa Cha-Cha was...
Beautiful.
Absolutely
beautiful. I love it. Yeah.
The other element to that, like, the second episode is an outright comedy heist movie at times. But there is, like, the fact that it's, you know, the last time we see T'Challa in the, or Chadwick Boseman, the ending to it, there's a conversation between...
Fucking stupid show made me cry.
Yeah. It's 2 for 2 this week. But it's not anything mawkish. It's not anything overly sentimental. It's just about how you showed me the universe, and he says something about you would fit in anywhere in this universe, or you would be at home anywhere in the universe. And it's just,
Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if they rewrote that line. I don't know if they did.
You know, the second episode, just saying, you said it was a heist. The second episode is a heist like the way the Rick and Morty do heists. It's like, twist, twist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't know this, but he was plotting this all along.
Yeah. Ah, yes, classic triple cross. Yeah, like, Korath is the, like, fan insert character, and, like, he's like Rick, and like, ah, classic Rick, classic T'Challa.
Like, after those first three episodes, I'm enjoying this, like, the most of anything I've seen, just because it's so out there and so much fun. And I compare it to something like Suicide Squad, in the irreverence, like the new one, the James Gunn one, because someone actually told the writers on this, go crazy, do stuff, and you don't have to worry about the consequences, right?
Yeah.
But it, but it's also the three episodes we've seen have got different feels from each other. You know, the first one feels very much like the Captain America film. It's got the same sort of
same fucking color palette.
Yeah, oh, yeah, but they do different things with the color. They're the same with the Guardians of the Galaxy ones, but they do recreate scenes. Like, there's a scene where the Steve and the Howling Commandos break in a barn door and they're standing in a flying V. Yeah. And they do that shot, but with Captain Peggy Carter, and it's awesome. And they do that a little bit with some of the other ones. Not so much. I think, yeah, they do. I was wondering in the third episode, because the Universal Hulk thing, is this like, this is their backdoor way to make that MCU canon as opposed to Universal canon, because they have the building, they have the scene set up, they have that glass walkway, which is always weird in that movie anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is designed purely for a Hulk out.
Yeah. And I think and that third episode is quite dark. You know what I mean? Like, to see some of the things that happen.
If you're gonna have Nick Fury as Poro, some people gonna die.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
I was not expecting it to go that way.
Also, I was not expecting all the love for Thor's hair. even with all this darkness, they're like, we got a big tall drink of water. He's quite mostly taking everyone out. He's gorgeous. And then, like, Clank Gregg is like, yes, sir. That's an accurate description.
Yeah.
They were saying in interviews with the creators and showrunners that, just talking about the Universal kind of conflict with the Hulk and stuff, I don't know what the deal is with that. And I don't know whether Marvel has to get approval, but obviously they have to get approval for anything they do with Spider-Man. And so apparently Kevin Feige said, just because there is a Spider-Man story. And so Kevin Feige said, just come up with the best story that you can with Spider-Man and we'll handle the approvals. Because I think the writers were worried, we can't do anything with Spider-Man.
Yeah, but then when they're sliding over the updated agreement for the check sharing for like how much money that the Spider-Man has made in the Avengers movies and vice versa, they're just like, oh, also, we'd like to do this. Any problems?
Yeah.
Because we can hold up on the, we can delay payment on these, let me check, $1 gazillion.
Yeah.
We can hold off on that for a while, whereas the interest alone was going to pay for a yacht for everyone on the board.
Yeah, if you want to discuss this further, we can hold payment and then we can hash this out.
Oh, we can put Spider-Man in the show. Thanks. That's great. We'll sign right now. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. I don't know what they're going to do. I think there was a hint that there was a famous What If comic about Doctor Strange becoming a disciple of Dormammu. And I don't know if that is something they might follow, because there were hints that it was, what if Doctor Strange wasn't using light magic, but dark magic instead?
What if Doctor Strange had gone into the performing arts?
Hey, become a traveling magician. Well, that's another famous What If comic about what if Spider-Man had gone into the performing arts, basically. What if he wasn't a superhero, but ended up becoming an entertainer instead?
Well, the poster they've released has got Zombie Hawkeye and Zombie Cap. Who's the guy with the red face? Is that supposed to be Ultron with the... or is it Vision with the metal suit? There's a poster with the circles.
Ooh, I don't know.
So there is the Spider-Man Supreme, Sorcerer Supreme.
Ah, okay.
There's also Gamora with Thanos' armor and his blade. There's T'Challa. There's the Hydra Stomper. It's fantastic.
It's great. From the trailer, we could tell that there was an episode where Michael B. Jordan is a superhero.
Yes. It's basically
Killmonger becomes a good guy? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also one of, I think it has Scarlett Johansson, but she's wearing like more like, I don't know, chunkier armor than her normal kind of just catsuit thing. She's on the upside down of the poster. The poster, just Google what's it, what if poster, you'll see it. But the
was that Scarlett Johansson, you think?
I can't. Nope.
No, it's okay. Definitely not Scarlett Johansson. That was one, yeah, they just couldn't, you know, they didn't find someone to bother. But yeah, then Mark Ruffalo pops out of a closet. You're like, cool. It's like Ruffalo. He doesn't have that many lines. But again, maybe he'll turn up in other ones, right?
Mm, that's probably it, yeah.
Because it seems like they've gotten, well, ScarJo wasn't going to do any more voice acting for Disney right now, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, not anymore. You don't know why that happened. Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore.
But they seem to have gotten everyone who's going to make an appearance, at least in the series, because I think Mark Ruffalo's in the She-Hulk series, along with Tim Roth. And they're all going to be in the She-Hulk series, and then Marvel's, or Ms. Marvel has a whole bunch of people as well. So they seem to have been bringing back the whole team.
Anyone had to come by the offices to pick up their paycheck was like, can we just grab you for 5 minutes?
Just, yeah, pull you in. Well, isn't the Tim Roth villain from the Hulk in Shang-Chi?
Yep.
In the background, in the trailer, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand why he's fighting Wong. Is just that, like, is this what Wong does at the weekends for fun?
Yeah, Abomination.
It's his weekend fight club. It's how he stays loose.
And he doesn't tell Stephen Strange about it because he doesn't talk about Weekend Fight Club.
Yeah, the first rule.
All right, what if? General consensus, fun, good time, we like it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like the Nazi got punched in the gut, it took my breath away.
Oh,
I love how his face just collapses within itself. It's great.
Yeah, but she just goes to absolute town on him and throws motorbikes. That scene is just pure joy.
Yeah.
All I'm hoping is that this opens the door for more Hayley Atwell in the MCU.
Well, she already had her own TV. I never finished Peggy. Peggy Carter was 2 seasons, right? Agent Carter.
Agent Carter was 2 seasons. It was a lot of fun. It was really funny because she had Giles and...
Is it on Hotstar?
No, Giles. Jarvis.
Is it on Hotstar?
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, I think it is.
I think it is, yeah.
I think it is, yeah.
Because I never finished it. I watched, I think, the first season.
And they were short seasons.
It never got to the point where it jumped the shark, I think, which was nice.
And it played with that, with the kind of feminist dynamic that we see in the first episode as well, because she's part of the SSR, but you know, she's really got to earn her merit, right?
But Bradley Whitford is a dick. Did you also notice they went out of their way to just murder Tommy Lee Jones? Like, I think you see his face briefly and then he gets blown up along with Erskine. His character's there as well.
Yet again, Stanley Tucci for 30 seconds.
Yes, he said it was him, right?
It was him.
Yeah.
I did actually like that they didn't kill. I thought it was going to be, we killed Steve and that's why she became a superhero, which I like they didn't do that.
No, but that was a nice, like, because I think that's also the nice reminder that, you know, the super soldier serum didn't make Steve Captain America. Steve was always fucking Captain America.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He was just the most patriotic, well-meaning person on the planet, right?
Mm. Mm.
What if... definitely worth checking out. Weekly episodes, new episodes drop every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Both of these shows that we talked about today, What If and Coda, you have to watch them. I think Coda is going to make some impression over award season for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
And let us know what you think when you've seen them. You know how to get in touch. Our social media is @GogglerMY. Also, email us at podcast@goggler.my. You can also send us a text message on our WhatsApp message on our hotline, 012-524-5208. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Goggler Podcast.